Good morning. Today is Daf Makos Zayin. We are on Vav Amud Beis. We're starting right after the Mishnah, but let's go over the Mishnah again on Vav Amud Beis. The Mishnah begins Hayushnayim Rowan Oso Michalon Zeh Veshayim Rowan Oso Michalon Zeh Ve'echad Masma Be'emsa. So you have a scenario where there are two sets of witnesses, and generally speaking, when we have a whole group of witnesses, so as we learned in yesterday's Daf, it doesn't matter if it's 2, 3, or even 100. So under certain circumstances, those witnesses could be viewed as one corporate entity, one group. And the whole case is going to be built around all of them, but because they're all one unified unit, if one goes down, so the whole case goes down and the case gets dismissed. But over here, because there is no visual contact between one group and another group, and they have two different vantage points, and actually the witnesses don't see one another, so as a result of that, these witnesses are going to be viewed as two separate groups. And as a result of that, and if they don't see each other, it's considered two separate edos. Lefichach. And then the Mishnah brings us to the conclusion, which is an unusual one, but a logical one in this regard. So now let's have a scenario in which, of those two different sets of witnesses, one are turned out to be Edom Zalmimim. So under those circumstances now, they're going to be put to death. But the other Edom, however, are an independent group. And if the other set of Edom now have properly seen and answered all the questions of the Beis Din, so now the defendant is also going to be put to death as well. So here you have a really unusual circumstance where we have a case where the Edom Zomimim are going to be put to death and the defendant is going to be put to death. Rabbi Yossi Omer La'olam Ein Na'aragim Achu Shnei Edom Masrim Bo. Now, Rav Yossi says this case would never work because you need the actual Edom themselves to give the Hasra. Shenemar Api Shnaim Edom, because the Torah says Api, it has to be done through the mouth. According to Rav Yossi, that means that the mouth is not only there to testify, but the mouth is also there to give the Hasra. Devar Acher Api Shnaim Edom, Shlotei Sanhedrin Shamas Mipi HaTorgamon. And another halacha that he learns out from the Pesukim is that there can be no Torgamon. The judges themselves have to hear directly from the Edom, which means that they have to speak their language and they have to understand what the Edom are saying. More about that coming up at the end of this sugya. Amar Rav Zusha Bar Tuvia Amar Rav Minayin LeEdus Miyuchadu Shei Psula. Now the Gemara starts off with a very simple question, not question, but establishing a certain fact, and that is Edus Miyuchados. In order for the Edom to testify, so we need a pair, and we need the pair to be together. If one pair of witnesses are in fact segregated, so then the Edom is not going to work. And how do I know that? Shenemar lo yumas al pi ed echad. Because look at the pasuk. The pasuk describes how a person is not to be put to death over the testimony of one witness. Now my echad. Now what does that mean? Ilema ed echad mamish. Now what does that mean? One witness. So mereisha shamin Allah. From the very beginning of the pasuk, it already establishes that you can't accept just one testimony. Al pi shnayim edim. Torah already says you need two, which by definition is going to preclude one. Ela mai echad, echad, echad. It means that if I have two witnesses, but they are individualized, and again, that just simply means that they don't see one another. So under those circumstances, that's called edus miyuchados, that's segregated witnesses, and that is not going to work. Again, that's different than our Mishnah, by the way, because in our Mishnah, we had a pair for each of the vantage points. Over here, we're only having one from one vantage point and one from the other vantage point. And again, because they don't see one another, so therefore they're not to be combined. Tanya Mehacha, the Gemara quotes the Braisa, making exactly the same point. Lo yumas api eid echad, lahavi shnaim, sheron oso, echa mechalon zeh, vein roen zeh zeh, she'ein mitstarfin. So the Braisa makes exactly the point we just said, that if these two witnesses do not see one another, so they do not combine. Velo od. Elafi bezecha zeh, Bechalon echad, ein mitzarfin. Let's say there's a window, but the window is let's describe it as being very small, where I can have the two witnesses, but each one can only see one at a time. That too, says the Braisa, is no good. In other words, the witnesses have to see out of one vantage point, or I don't mean one, but I mean they have to be from the same vantage point, meaning they have to see one another, and they have to see the event at the same time. Well, we'll get to that in just a second. Amalei Rav Papa La Abaye, Hashta. Gemara says, look, point number two seems to be so obvious after learning point number one. Point number one is that I have one witness over here, one witness over there. They don't see one another, but they're looking at the whole act. That doesn't combine. In number two, it's true that you're having the two witnesses and they do know one another and they do see one another, and they're looking from the same vantage point, but they're not looking at the whole act. Of course that testimony is not going to be good. Of course they can't be valid witnesses. Neither of them is even seeing the whole act. So after knowing point number one, how can you even entertain point number two? But the Gemara says, I'll tell you, Amar Leh Lo Nitzcha Ela Lebol Sa'erva. The Gemara says, well, you can have a prolonged Aveira. For example, Arias. So Arias, in other words, Arias could be a prolonged Aveira. You don't need to see the entire act of the Arias. All you need to do is see just a moment of the Arias, and that would be enough. So now, Gemara says, now number two is a Chiddush. Because in number two, there was an act of Arias, which was the crime. Each one of the witnesses took a moment to see it out of one vantage point. But again, the window was so small, they can only see it one at a time. So now what? So it's not like murder, where murder, there's a point of murder, and then there's a point where there's no murder. So one person sees through the window, you know, either before the murder, or maybe the right after the murder. But only one of those two witnesses is going to see the actual murder itself. Over here by Arias, each witness is going to be seeing a moment of the actual Aveira itself. So the Gemara says, under those circumstances, now we can make an argument. Now we understand that we're seeing a Chiddush. Because even though each one of them saw a Maisa Aveira, nevertheless, because they both didn't see it at the same time, so that now is going to upset the testimony, dismiss the testimony. It's not going to be good. Yeah, but again, the murder is when you cause it. I understand, but the murder is when you cause the death, the actual death. So in other words, if the first 19 times he's not dead yet, so even those are all... Okay. Right. In other words, one of them saw the actual moment of death, and one of them did not. Amar Rava, im hayu roen es ha masra or masra roen son mitzarfen. Okay. Now we're talking about unifying and joining the witnesses, so that now they become a kat edim. They become a group of edim. So what do we say? That they need visualization, one of the other. The Gemara says there can be a point man, there can be a middleman, and specifically the masra. Meaning if the guy who's providing the warning, and our mission, we just debated whether or not the witnesses themselves need to provide the warning. But according to the Tanakhama, they don't. And not only that, but we're learning now also an additional point in the Gemara. In that, if the warner is able to see the two Edom, even though the two Edom cannot see one another, so they're coming from a vantage point where they can't see one another, but both of them can see the Masra, the one who's providing the warning, so that warner now is going to be considered the point man, which will combine the two Edim, so now he can be Mitzar if he can combine the two Edim. V'amarava, Masra, She'amru, afilu mipi atma v'afilu mipi ashed. And the one who's providing the warning, where does that have to come from? Now again, this is according to the Chachamim. According to Rav Yossi, there's no discussion. According to Rav Yossi, it must come from the Edim, but we're not discussing Rav Yossi right now. We're discussing the Chachamim. So according to the Chachamim, where can that warning come from? So we can have just simply an objective third-party warner, like we described in our Mishnah. But the Gemara over here says, but it can even come from other sources as well, other unusual sources. One, says the Gemara, is that mipi atzma, meaning the one who's about to be murdered. Meaning, I know he's going to be pleading, but if somehow we could just simply, you know, be calm enough, so to say, and say, you know, you're not allowed to do that. You know, the Torah says it's aser. You know, if you do that, you know what the consequences are going to be. So the harug himself can provide the warning, and the Gemara says, and it can even come from a shade. Even come from a shade, meaning if it comes from some sort of disembodied source, as long as the warning was presented and provided, so then that will be a warning. Now, what we discussed yesterday, if you're the Rambam and you read a Gemara like this, what do you do with a Gemara like this? What is a shade? But if you're the Rambam, so you'll simply say shade of the Gemara just simply means it's a disembodied voice, meaning somebody gave the warning, we just don't know who it is. But it came from somewhere, even though we don't know where the source of it is. Amar of Nachman Eidus Miuchados Kshera B'dinim Amrus Tichsiv Lo Yumas Api Eid Echad B'dinim Naf Nefashos Hu De'in Kshera Ava B'dinim Amrus Kshera. Rav Nachman has a Chiddush, and Rav Nachman says that yes, it's true. that as we've been learning now since the beginning of Shir today, when you have Din and Nefashos, when it's a capital crime, so the Edom have to be Mitzaref, they have to be combined. They have to see one another. But that's not true by Mamonos. By Mamonos, says Rav Nachman, it's not necessary for the Edom to see one another. As long as each one of them sees the event, even if they're seeing it from different vantage points, and even if they don't see one another, according to Rav Nachman, that's going to be Mitzaref, it will combine. Maskev Marzutra. Elamiyata B'din and Nefashos. So, Tatzel. So, the Gemara says, well, if that's true, so then let's consider. Look at Rashi over here. Elamiyata. So, the generally speaking, we're saying now that for Mamonos, they don't need to see one another. So, the Gemara says, B'din and Nefashos, look at Rashi. Kishishnaim Ro Michalon Zev, Vishnaim Michalon Zev, V'huz Mukas Achas, Titztarf Eduzu Liyos Kulam, Go back to the case of our Mishnah. Remember in our Mishnah, we had a scenario in where there was not one from one vantage point and one from one vantage point, but there were two in each vantage point. And in our Mishnah, what do we say? Because they don't see one another, so as a result of that, they're considered two independent groups. And as a result of that, even though one of the groups are muzemes, nevertheless, the other one's testimony is going to sustain. So here's now what the Gemara is bothered by Rav Nachman. You're saying that Eidus Miyuchados fundamentally should work, meaning by Mamonos. If it's one and one, from two different vantage points, it works. Why? Because you're ready to be Mitzaref. So Rav Nachman, the Gemara is now asking Rav Nachman if that's true. And our mission, now granted, our mission of course is not Mamonos, it's a capital case. But still, if you're saying that fundamentally, two vantage points should be able to combine, at least in principle, so here, we should make an argument, we'd want to make an argument that the two pairs of witnesses from the two vantage points should combine, because once we combine, what have we now accomplished? What we've now accomplished is that by being mazim one group, the entire Eidus now goes away, and as a result of that, v'hitzilas ha'eda, we get to save the defendant. So why aren't you entertaining such a possibility? Meaning, what about a Mishnah? Yeah. Alam Tzadon, just give me a second. So in our Mishnah, the Gemara answers Kasha. The Gemara says you're right. In other words, if according to Rav Nachman, you could fundamentally take two vantage points and combine them together, how would Rav Nachman understand our Mishnah? The Gemara says you're right. He has a difficulty with our Mishnah. Yes.
If there's two witnesses for one case, one of them is
Shul,
doesn't still make the other person take a
Shul? Right, right. Your point is very good. Tosus yesterday pointed out that could be one of the reasons why, if you remember back, right in the Mishnah that we saw on the bottom of Hamad Beis, on the top of Vavam and Aleph, we talked about cutting off one of the Edom, meaning there are three of them, and then one of them ends up becoming Pasul. So, according to Rabbi Yossi of the Mishnah, that is, if one is possible, they're all possible, but that's not true by Dina Mamonos. So Rashi says it has to do with the idea of Hitzilah Sa'idah. Tosus over there makes the point you're making now, which is why by Mamonos are we so prepared to cut one off? So Tosus back then on Vavam and Aleph says, because by Mamonos, one witness in of itself is significant. So it could very well be that's right. In other words, by Eidus Miyuchados, By Mamonos has to do with the fact that each witness in and of itself is a significant testimony, in that it could provide the other party to make a shul. It's a very good point. Rabbi Yossi Amar v'chulei. Now we're just finishing up this sugya. So Amar Rapapa L'Abaye. Sorry, Rabbi Yossi says that in order for the warning to be a valid warning, there has to be a hasra that's issued by the witness himself. Now, does Rav Yossi really hold that? To none. Rav Yossi Omer Sone, somebody who hates his friend. I know those two words don't agree, but okay. somebody who hates his friend. So and he now makes the following argument. I know I killed him, but it was Meshogeg. It was inadvertent. So Nerag. So according to Rav Yossi, such an individual is in fact going to be put to death. Meaning the hatred leads us to believe that this was by no means an accident, and he killed him intentionally. Now the Gemara says, now wait one second. I don't understand. How are we getting to this point? Didn't Rav Yossi, you just get done saying that not only does it have to be a warning, but the warning has to be issued by the witness himself. How can we now even have this discussion of, well, the history of hatred that existed between the two leads us to the conclusion that he did a b'mezid? The Gemara here is making a very good point. If there was a warning, we don't have to guess. We'll know. Because what is a warning? As we discussed already a number of times, a warning is not just simply saying don't do it and if you do it. A warning also has to be an acceptance on the part of the perpetrator. Yes, I know what I'm about to do. Yes, I don't care. Yes, I'm going to do it anyway. Afal pi kein, I'm going to do it. That's a warning. So if that's what the warning looks like, we don't have to guess anymore. So Rav Yossi here is talking about, well, because of the hatred, he probably did it on purpose. Well, we don't have to say probably. With a warning, we'll know. So Amrlay, so the Gemara says, it's a very strong question, but the answer, although not elegant, but it's an answer, Hahu Rav Yossi Rav Yehudihi. No, that's not the same Rav Yossi as our Mishnah. It's a different Rav Yossi. Rav Yossi Rav Yehuda. We saw this position back in Sanhedrin. Ditanya Rav Yossi Rav Yehuda Omer. Chaver Ein Tzarech Hasra Lefish Lo Nitna Hasra El Alafka Mishogig Lamezit. So Rav Yossi Rav Yehuda back in Sanhedrin, and here again in Makos, teaches us that a warning does not have to be issued to a chaver. Chaver is somebody who knows Torah. Who knows Torah, knows halachos, doesn't mean he's going to follow it, but in other words, but he knows it. And since he knows it, no warning has to be issued. Why? According to Rav Yossi Rav Yehuda, the warning is there only to provide one piece of information. Was this intentional, or was this not intentional? Did he know about the Isser and still do it, or did he not know? So for somebody who's not a chaver, so we have to find out by asking him a very simple question. Hey, did you know the Torah said you're not allowed to do that? Okay, fine. And the warning is there so that we know that he knows that it's usher. But if it's a chaver, according to Rav Yossi Rav Yehuda, the assumption is that according to everybody, the chaver assumes that we know he knows the halacha. And now according to Rav Yossi Rav Yehuda, we no longer need to ascertain whether or not he did this out of ignorance out of knowledge. We know that he did that out of knowledge, and that's it. And therefore no warning has to be issued. That Rav Yossi Rav Yehuda now in the case of the Sone, now we have to do a little bit of guesswork. When the Sony now comes to court and says, yeah, I killed him, but I killed him b'shogeg, and so now, according to Rav Yossi Rav Yehuda, no warning was issued, and so now we have to guess. Was it really b'shogeg, or did he do some b'mezid? And Rav Yossi, meaning Rav Yossi Rav Yehuda, now is going to make another point. Not only did he not need a warning, but because of the history of hatred that existed between the two, we're going to assume that he killed him b'mezid, and not b'shogeg. Okay. Davar Acher. Last halacha of the Mishnah, last point of the sugya. Hanu loazi. There were people who were speaking a different language. So Rava says, okay, don't speak the language. Bring in the interpreter. The Gemara asked the obvious question. So the obvious question, of course, is, wait one second. That goes against what we just learned together in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that the judges have to hear directly from the witness. Rava made havayada madava amre va'adura delo havayada. So the Gemara describes Rava's understanding of la'az as a decent understanding, but not really a good one. Understood enough, but didn't know how to speak the language. So in other words, so he understood what they were saying, but in terms of responding, he felt much more comfortable having an interpreter there so that he could have a better form of communication with them, but he understood them. Eli Vituvia, we're on the very top of Zayin Amud Aleph. Gemara describes two people. They were witnesses and Kreva Darava Hava. The problem is that they were related, not to the borrower, not to the lender, but to the guarantor. And so, Savra Papa Lamemar, Gabilov Amava Rechikininu. So our Papa thought, okay, I understand these witnesses have some sort of relationship with some party of the case, but not the principal litigants. The principal litigants, the borrower and the lender, are not related to them. And Rav Papa said, okay, it's not a problem. So Amalei Rav Huna, Bereid Rav Yeshua, Rav Papa, Yileis Leilalova, Lav Basarava, Azal Malva. So to which Rav Huna, Bereid Rav Yeshua seems to be making an obvious point to Rav Papa. There obviously needs to be some more details over here so that we can better understand Rav Papa's Havamina. But he makes an obvious point, which is, what do you mean the Arava is not one of the principal litigants? He's a guarantor. In the event of default, so you know who the Malva is coming after. The Malva is coming after the Arav. So over here, these witnesses are not going to be testifying. So you cannot call them objective. in the event of default, you know that they're going to be going after the witness's relative, the Arev. So you can't have these witnesses testify. They are Krovim Ladavar. They're relatives to members of the case. Again, not the lender, not the borrower, but the guarantor, who can easily become part and parcel of this case in the event of a default. Okay. Mi Shenigmar Dino. We are on the final Mishnah of the first parak of Makos. We're on Zayin Amad Aleph. We are now discussing a case that was finalized. Mishnigmar Dino Varach. And we're talking about a capital case. And the case was finalized, the verdict was issued, and the defendant, who is now no longer a defendant, but a convicted felon, so somehow he breaks free, runs away. Obalifne also based it. And he gets grabbed and is brought back to the same basin. Ain social in his dino. So the verdict is a good verdict. The verdict now is recorded and the verdict stands. There is no need or reason to open up the case again for new deliberation. We've done it already. The fact that he ran away and now come back is not cause for us to reopen the case. We just simply now carry out the case based on the verdict that was issued. Now, a similar circumstance, it's not the same, where I have now a guy who runs away from court after the verdict's been issued, and now he finds himself in another court, and the witnesses now, a pair of witnesses, doesn't even have to be the same witnesses. It could be a different pair of witnesses. And witnesses now are just testifying over one thing, and that is, this guy was convicted in that court. Once the witnesses give us that information, so now, harizei yareg, we could take that information now and put him to death. Even though these witnesses are providing any information about the actual crime itself, no need. Meaning that was already done in the court. The process was already carried out. All these witnesses are doing is just simply testifying, hey, we were in the court when the verdict was rendered. The guy ran away, but I'm telling you, though, that this guy is convicted. So, harizei yareg, so this person now is going to be put to death. Sanhedrin ohagis baretz v'chutz laaretz. Now, a point that sounds like belongs back in Sanhedrin, but comes now here at the end of the first parak of Makos, Sanhedrin can be effective both in and out of Eretz Yisrael. Now, Sanhedrin, as the Mishnah points out over here, is by Din and Nefashos. Now, perhaps you thought, and it could also be perhaps because I've said this already a number of times in the past, that capital cases can only be tried in Eretz Yisrael. You can't try a capital case outside of Eretz Yisrael. In fact, Dayanim outside of Eretz Yisrael don't have smicha, generally speaking, meaning if they were born and raised outside of Eretz Yisrael. You only get smicha in Eretz Yisrael, not outside of Eretz Yisrael. So how can I have a court made up of non-musmachim try a capital case? So it's going to be pretty clear, although the Mishnah doesn't say it straight out, but the only way that a court can operate outside of Eretz Yisrael is only when you have a court operating in Eretz Yisrael. Meaning that the court outside of Eretz Yisrael can serve v'derech shluchusayu, meaning by proxy of the court in Eretz Yisrael. And I'd venture a guess also, although I'm not sure about this point, but I feel pretty confident saying it, that also, even in this regard, the members of the court of Chutz La'aretz have to be musmachim, meaning they have to have had received smicha in Eretz Yisrael in order for them to judge outside of Eretz Yisrael. Again, I'm not 100% sure about that.
But where is Sanhedrin? Is only one court in
Yerushalayim. Right. So just... Right, Sanhedrin over here in the Mishnah just simply means a court, not the court. Meaning the right. Don't put the article the in front of the word. Just put the article a in front of the word, a court. So in other words, Sanhedrin over here just simply means a court of 23, right? Not the Sanhedrin. So Be'eretz v'chutzar, Sanhedrin areges echa b'shavua nikres chovlanis. And then perhaps one of the most famous lines of the Mishnayos, and again, it's not in Sanhedrin. The location of this Mishnah is at the end of the first parak of Makos. Any court that ends up executing somebody once every 7 years is considered chovlanis, a court that is a real destructive force. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Omer Echad L'Shivim Shana. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says once every 70 years. And again, I'm sure there's a connection. The Mishnah and Brachos, which we're all familiar with, Hare Ani Kaven Shivim Shana. Somehow Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is attached to this number 70. Rabbi Tarfon Rabbi Kiva Omer Milo Ha'inu B'Sanhedrin Lo Nerega Adam E'Olam. Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon says this, and had we been operating the court, we would have operated in such a way, in such a manner, in which nobody would ever be convicted. Meaning, well, the Gemara is going to actually be specific in terms of what they're going to do to basically find nearly every defendant innocent of any crime being accused of. And Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon says it would never happen that someone would be executed. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Avhein Mar ben Shofchei Dam in Yisrael. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel challenges that ideology, meaning never is too extreme, because if there's never a threat that Beis Din is going to ever execute somebody, so then you don't have the impediment of people behaving in a civil manner, knowing that a court is never going to find them guilty. In other words, at least you need some threat that Beis Din is going to actually act out an execution. Once every 7 years, once every 70 years, but there has to be something where they know that this could be it. You, Rabbi Tarfon, Rabbi Akiva, if you behave in such a manner which no defendant is ever going to be found guilty, so that really will be, that'll put a real wrench in society and in societal norms. Okay, so they're not happy with this statement of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon. The Gemara is bothered by the beginning of the Mishnah, because in the beginning of the Mishnah, we talked about the runaway convict. In the first case of the Mishnah, the runaway convict was both caught and taken back to the original court. And what did we learn together? The verdict stands. And basically, we're just going to now go through with the execution. What's the implication? So the Gemara picks up on that right away. So if they're now brought to another court, not to the original one, so what it sounds like from the Mishnah is that we are going to have to retry and re-deliberate the case because it's a brand new court. Hatani Seifa. The Gemara says, but I'll tell you what the problem with that, of course, is that read the next point of the Mishnah. In the next case of the Mishnah, clearly he's not being brought back to the same court. You have now a pair of witnesses who are presenting themselves in the next court and saying, this guy was convicted. And what did the Mishnah tell us? Oh, okay. So we're not retrying. We're not re-deliberating. We're just going to go through with the verdict. So now, the obvious problem is the implication of the first statement of the Mishnah is connected to the very next statement of the Mishnah. In the first statement of the Mishnah, only when brought back to the original court do we not have to retry. If brought back to a new court, now, obviously this new court was told about the history, otherwise why are they retrying it? So it was reported to them that this person was convicted, and yet the clear implication of the first statement of the Mishnah is the case has to be retried. Meanwhile, in the very next line of the Mishnah, when Adam are reporting that this person was convicted in some other court, so the Beis Din says, okay, we're just going to go through with the verdict. That is what's called a stira. Amar Abaye, just give me a second. Amar Abaye lo kasha kam b'eretz Yisrael kam b'chutz la'aretz. Ditanya. Gemara over here makes a fascinating distinction. And that is, where does he land up in the new court? So if he lands up in Eretz Yisrael, meaning his original case was tried in Chutz La'aretz, his new case is tried now in Eretz Yisrael, under those circumstances, the case is going to be retried. Detailing the Gemara quotes of Brisa supporting this answer. Rav Yehuda ben Dustai Omer Mishum Rabbi Shimon Meshetach Baruch Me'eretz L'Chutz La'aretz Ein Sosrin Ezdino. You run from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz, and it's now being reported through witnesses what happened in Eretz Yisrael. So the Beis Din Chutz La'aretz now just simply says, we're good. We don't have to retry the case. The verdict found in Eretz Yisrael is good. However, Mechutz La'aretz La'aretz Sosrin Ezdino. But when the original case was tried in Chutz La'aretz and then brought to Eretz Yisrael, again, he ran away. He went to Eretz Yisrael. So now he gets this case retried. Why? So it's so funny. If I didn't see the next words of the Gemara, I would have simply said, it has to do with the fact that maybe there's more competence in the judges in Eretz Yisrael, right? Maybe they'll do a better job giving a trial. Mimnei zechuso shel Eretz Yisrael. Interesting. Gemara here describes it, the Brisa describes it as having something to do with the zechus of Eretz Yisrael, right? In other words, when you make Aliyah, it should all happen to every one of us. So when you make Aliyah, so you're like, it's like a fresh start in life. And for this particular person, it may well be just that. When there's a zechus in Eretz Yisrael in that, Even though, imagine, it's really, what a powerful point. Even though the person was tried and convicted in a court outside of Eretz Yisrael, but Zechus Eretz Yisrael may give him a fresh start, a fresh trial. And so under those circumstances, that's the case in the which the Mishnah is describing, where the person is going to be retried.
Even though they know that he was convicted.
Yeah. Right, correct, person. Correct. Right, agreed. That's
too many
American
convicts.
Right, you're right, they're right.
On the way there.
I'm familiar. Yes, I've heard.
Did that bring the heading from the Rukus Lars to inside the Paris Israel to retry? When somebody...
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to retry me, you have to bring back, you know, you're going to have to bring back the witnesses. Yeah, yes.
Okay, so the second case where they're brought to a second court.
Yeah.
And those witnesses are found to be so mad, would they get the penalty?
I don't know. It's... I hear. I hear. I'm not sure if I'm ready to think to think that hard right now, but okay. give me some more time to think about it. Okay. Sanhedrin Nohagas. Minahani Mili Tana Rabbanan. The Gemara now quotes the Braisa, which is going to explain our Mishnah. Our Mishnah here is describing how courts were set up both in and outside of Eretz Yisrael. Now, when you read the Pesukim in the Torah in the beginning of Parsha Shoftim describing the setup, the formation of a Beis Din, you get the indication, you get the implication that it's a mitzvah tluya ba'aretz. Now, on one hand I say that, on the other hand I know it can't be. In other words, we're talking about setting up a legal system. In other words, everyone needs a legal system, both in and outside of Eretz Yisrael. Also, we know, we learned this back in Sanhedrin, one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. So it's hard to imagine that setting up a court is specific to Eretz Yisrael. But at least for a moment, we're going to entertain the idea. So first, what the Gemara does is it quotes a pasuk from the end of Sefer Bamidbar, Perek Lamed Hey, and that we're going to be having courts bechol moshvoseichem. Right? The Gemara doesn't quote the end of the pasuk, and that end of the pasuk is important in terms of making this point. Wherever we are, right, that's where we need a court. Right, similar to Shabbos. Right, it says by Shabbos, bechol moshvoseichem, wherever you are. So by a court, it says bechol moshvoseichem. So that teaches us that the Sanhedrin applies both in and outside of Eretz Yisrael. Imkei matam lamar bisharecha. However, when you open up to the beginning of Parsha Shoftim, the pasuk says, I'm reading the pasuk, shoftim v'shoftim titen lecha bechol she'arecha. So you're setting it up in all of your gates. Asher Hashem Elokecha nosen lecha, which Hashem gives you. Meaning we're talking about Eretz Yisrael. So really, what the truth of the matter is, it's really a stira between Pesukim. One Pasuk describes how we're setting up a court through, universally, in and outside of Eretz Yisrael. Another Pasuk seems to give the implication that it's only in Eretz Yisrael. B'sharecha ta Moshe batei din b'chol plachum. I'm sorry. So now what the Gemara is going to explain now is that, yes, courts are set up everywhere. There's still going to be a difference between in and out of Eretz Yisrael. B'sharecha ata Moshe batei din b'chol plachu plachu v'chol ir v'ir. In Eretz Yisrael, a Beis Din set up both for every district and for every city. V'chutz la'aretz ata Moshe b'chol plachu plachu v'yata Moshe b'chol ir v'ir. However, outside of Eretz Yisrael, you set up a court, and a court needs to be set up, but only b'chol plachu plachu, only by districts. But every city does not need its own court. Now it's interesting why that should be, meaning understood that there is a difference between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz, but what's the rationale behind that distinction? What's the basis for that distinction? So I don't have a good svara as of yet. I haven't heard a good svara as of yet. When I do, I will share. Sanhedrin Aregis. Okay. We are now talking about basically manners in which members of the Beis Din are going to conduct themselves to try to exonerate the victim. Now, we are actively trying to exonerate the victim because we learned on our Mishnah, basically what Beis Din should do is really limit the amount of convictions they have. One every 70 years, one every 70 years, and according to Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva, it would be never. So, Sanhedrin Arega. So the first question we're asking now is, in the opinions of the Mishnah, there should be some sort of schedule. As I'm saying it, I realize how funny that sounds. Right? Like, in other words, Beis Din like is looking at their calendar and it's like, okay, now it's time. So it's now time. So, Ibailu, basically the Gemara asked that very question. So we say one every 70 years. Does that mean to say that one every 70 years is already considered too much, or aruch aruch, that's about right? Teku. Okay. Gemara leaves that question unresolved. Rabbi Tafan, Rabbi Kiva, Omri Milu, Hayinu, V'chulei. And now the last point we're going to be discussing together in the Gemara is the opinions of Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tafan. So we already know from the Mishnah that the Chachamim ideologically did not agree with Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon. This idea that we're, Basin should never find guilt with any defendant, even if it seems pretty clear that he did it, is ideologically something that the Chachamim were opposed to. Okay, but that's ideology. Now we're talking about practically. What are Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon going to do to exonerate somebody who's clearly guilty? So the Gemara gives a number of examples of what they would do. Hey, Chiave Avdi. Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Elazar, Dami Tavar, Arisam Treifa Harag Shalem Harag. So the Gemara starts off with the opinions of Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Elazar, and Eretz Yisrael, where they say that here's what we're going to do. We're going to be asking the witnesses, well, you for sure saw a murder. We get that. That's clear. The victim, was he a Treifer or was he a Shalem? Was he somebody who had some sort of condition? A medical condition, and meaning that when we say medical condition, we mean that there was actually a hole in one of the major organs in which the person himself is going to die, what we call an halacha treifa. Killing a treifa is wrong, but not a capital crime. So it's right, it's an aveira, just not subject to the death penalty. So maybe the victim in question over here was a treifa. So, and that's one of the questions that's going to be asked to the witnesses. So Amar Avashi, Imtim Salam or Shalom Hava Dama Bamakum Saif Nekev Hava. And Ravashi says, and I'll tell you what, even if somehow they can answer and they say, no, we know that the person was not a treifa. Now, admittedly, by the way, this part of the Gemara is a little bit tricky because the establishing of somebody being a treifa is going to require some sort of medical examination. It will require an autopsy. Generally speaking, we're not going to be menaval sameis, we're not going to desecrate the body. I know that's an issue. I'm going to actively ignore that point for now. Not because it's something you should be ignored, but just for the time consideration. However, what Ravashi now says to the witnesses is, look, I know the guy checks out. But you know what? There could have been a hole. Do you know where the hole was? Meaning there was a hole in one of the internal organs? It's right in the spot where he got stabbed. So, now, okay. So, just wait 1 second. So I'm going to get to your point. That's the one point I wanted to tackle. So even with a examination of the victim and seeing that there was no nekev, but Ravashi says, but what we can now argue is that he was a treifa, and the treifa was bemakom nekev. Sorry, the sword that was hit was bemakom nekev, and therefore it's just simply it's unprovable that he wasn't a treifa. We are still going to entertain the idea he was a treifa, and that's how Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon would exonerate the murderer. Now Ben asked the question, Tosas asked the question, so and Rabbi Natan says this is all really difficult. Look at the second Tosas on the Amud. We could spend the rest of today with the Tosas. We're not going to, but at least from the beginning. Kashal Rabbi Natan, Darmin and Perakam the Chulin and Mapik Lamikra Delocheshinlan Lahadas and Basaruba. Tosfos Rabbi Natan over here is just perplexed by our Gemara. We learned in the beginning of Chulin, or I should say rather now that we're closer to Chulin on the front end, we will learn together in Masechta Chulin in the very beginning. There's something called Rov. Rov tells us most people are not treifas. And now we're entertaining one of the most remote possibilities that the man was a treifa, and it just happens to be that where he got punctured with the sword is where the hole was, and therefore it's unverifiable. That is such a remote possibility, and as far as halacha is concerned, that's not how halacha operates. Halacha operates on what is more likely with the majority probability. So Tosfos says, so I don't understand.
You want to save a life, so you go to the extreme.
Even though, of course, yeah, in other words, Vitzila Seida, we want to save him. We do want to save him, but we have to use valid halachic methodology in doing so. This is seemingly not valid. So what basically Rabbi Natan goes on to say, I'm not going to read the rest of Tosfos right now, but basically Rabbi Natan goes on to say is that, yeah, from a halachic standpoint, 100% correct. Rov would dictate that the person was not a treifa. That's true. What? At least this is Rabbeinu Tam's answer. Again, there's a lot to this Tosfos, but at least within Rabbeinu Tam's answer, these are just simply questions that Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Kiva would be asking the witnesses to try to trip them up. Meaning, if this issue, if this matter was not discussed in Beis Din, obviously, we'll assume that the person who was killed is not a treifa. But as long as Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Kiva are working with the mission statement of let's try to trip up the witnesses, so these are some of the types of questions that would be asked, hopefully in the event of getting them to cross one another in the cross-examination. That's a possible way to explain our Gemara.
Yeah, what would the witnesses be able to tell? I mean, that, if you ask the question, basically, they cannot know
whether this guy had a hole or not. Right, right. So, right. In other words, if they would have said, I don't know, so then there's not Beis Din still going to go through with the case. But in other words, but if they do answer and their answers cross one another, so then the case will be dismissed. Tosfos points out. I know I didn't read the Tosfos inside. Tosfos points out. Right. In other words, let's say the questions were asked about the weapon. A detail about the weapon. If they say I don't know, that's fine. But if one gives one detail and the other one gives a different detail, so then we throw the witnesses out. So Tosfos says, Rabbi Tam at least says that's what Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon are looking to do in such a scenario. Where are you? Right by the brackets.
Says
it, but remember, tell me, Dina. Rindi Elo Shalina Chayev is there, Omer. No, he says Alpha Gav de Besaifa Ririn Amru Ain Aniyodin Harezenachon. Oh, I see. But in other words, he goes on to say, but this is even worse. By saying I don't know to when the I don't know is going on the victim himself. Let's discuss this afterwards. Bebola Esa Erva. Again, back to the Gemara now. Again, are the kinds of questions that Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon are going to ask the witnesses to try to trip them up in order to exonerate the perpetrator?
In order to exonerate or in order to do cross-examination?
Well, right now, we'll see. You'll see. So, Bebol Sarefa, Hechi Av Avdi, Abayver Amma Damar Tavai Risim, Kemacho B'Shoferes. So, let's say it's a case of Neof, it's a case of adultery. So, what Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon says is, yeah, it looked like adultery, but did you actually see it? And the Gemara over here gives a mashal, gives an analogy in which basically they have to see it with the most graphic details, which, you know, is quite frankly makes me a little bit uncomfortable right now. But in other words, that's what the kinds of questions that the judges would ask the witnesses. So the Gemara says, now, as far as the Chachamim are concerned, obviously they don't subscribe to this. And the Gemara points out, yeah, you know why they don't subscribe to this? Because, like, let's say an example of Neof, so they don't have to see it with that kind of graphic detail. So, that when it comes to something like Neuf, so the witnesses don't need to see anything with any kind of graphic detail. They just need to see the two of them behaving in a way that looks like adultery. Okay, so the assumption, of course, is that it's adultery. And they don't need to see it with that kind of detail. And even if they see it with just a vague vantage point, but still, as long as it looks like Neuf, so then they're going to be tried and convicted of adultery. Yeah, so right. So what's his counter-argument to that?
Yes.
It's a good question.
Maybe was there prison? Maybe yeah. Prison is a counter-argument. No, there's no prison.
Okay. We could deliberate. Let's table this for now. it's fine. It's a healthy debate, but I don't know the answer, so at least for the time being, let's move on. Hadron Alach Ketzan Ha'idim, that is the end of the first parak of Makos. We start now the second parak of Makos. Second parak of Makos, when we started the Masechta, so I outlined the Masechta is very organized. First parak has to do with Edom Zomimim, although the tail end of it had to do really more with Sanhedrin. But the first parak is Edom Zomimim, second parak is Galus, third parak is Makos. Okay. It's kind of funny that the Masechta is called Makos, even though only a third of it has to do with Makos, but okay. Yeah, right. Right. But anyway, we talk about Galus. Okay, Galus is a fascinating topic. This parak is super enjoyable. And we are obviously the discussion over here revolves around this idea of somebody killing inadvertently. But now, I'm telling you, in other words, I know I say this often, we've got to put on your legal hats because we are all going to be lawyers now. But especially for this parak over here, we're really going to be, it's going to be legalese. We are going to be speaking in legal terms for the duration of this parak because, quite frankly, shogeg just doesn't mean, oops, it was an accident. Shogeg has a very specific definition in which, under very specific and limited circumstances, the person is going to be sent into galus. Meaning that, obviously, when it comes to killing somebody, there's going to be a range where that was a total accident that went beyond my control to where it was premeditated murder. You see in our country, right, the different levels that are given in terms of murder. So the Gemara, it's the same. In other words, we're operating with different levels, and being sent into galus is only in a very specific specific section of the spectrum of it was a total accident to, no, I meant to kill this individual. Terminology that we should be familiar with before going into this parak is as follows. Number one, if something was beyond your control and it was a total accident, that's called ones. For such an individual, obviously, he's not going to go into galus. If somebody, on the other hand, has a premeditated murder, that's called mazit. So that, obviously, he's not going to be sent into galus. If there are witnesses and they warned him, so he's going to be executed otherwise, he's not going into galus. Even if it's karov lemazit, something which is close to mazit. Also, in other words, wouldn't be convicted in a court for actively killing somebody, premeditated murder, but again, being that it's close to mazid, he's not going to go to galus. Galus is only going to be a very specific case of shogeg. And even then, shogeg, meaning that it was an activity that he should have been more careful, he was a little bit careless, but circumstances were such where, in other words, it was this careless activity that caused somebody to die. But even then, it's going to be more specific. As we're going to be learning in our first Mishnah, it has to be an activity where derech yirida, not derech aliyah, meaning that he did something which then led to an event that killed somebody, but he was not working against gravity, he was working together with gravity. The examples in the Mishnah will be very clear, but basically it has to be such a case in which you know you're working together with gravity, you know you need to be more careful, and you were a little bit careless. And as a result of that, somebody died. You didn't mean to kill the person, obviously, but you were a little bit careless, and as a result of that, that's shogeg, and that's a case where you're going to be sent into galus. Well, again, the details we're going to get to. I'm just right now looking at it from a broader standpoint of can't be mazid, can't be ones, even karav lemazid is not acceptable. There is a very specific set of parameters in which a person is going to be sent into galus. Eloina Golan. So the Mishnah over here describes those who are going to be sent into galus. Ha'orig nefesh b'shkaga. So you kill somebody b'shogeg. So we are going to be learning together in this first Mishnah three examples. Hayim ha'agav ha'magel v'nafa alav ha'arakto. Example number one. You're there with the ma'agela. Okay, so they had these roofs, and the roofs, that they threw a tar on top of the roof, and then they would roll out the tar. And they would use these big blocks of wood in order to roll out the tar. So if you're moving the blocks in a downward motion, meaning, you know, you were working with gravity. So under those circumstances, and now slips out of your hand or falls and it kills somebody, that's shogeg. If, however, this will be clear in the Mishnah. If, however, you're pushing that big chunk of wood up the roof, and then it slips out of your hand and it falls, that's not shogeg. Example number two. You are lowering a barrel. And in lowering the barrel now, you drop it, it slips, it falls, and it hits somebody, kills them, that's shogeg. Haya yorid besulam v'nafa alav arakto harizigola. You are going down the ladder. And as you're going down the ladder, you fall, and you land on somebody and kill him. So these are all examples of shogeg. The common denominator between all these cases, derech yirida. You are working together with gravity, so you know that there was already a force pulling it down, pushing it down. And so under these circumstances, you now know that this was a scenario in which you should have been more careful. You were not. Therefore, you're going to be sent into galus if this activity leads to the death of an individual. Aval im haya moshech b'ma'agela. Now all the Mishnah is going to do is go over these three examples where you're working against gravity. So you're taking now the case of the pitcher, pushing it up the rooftop, the incline of the roof. V'nafa alav arakto. It slips out of your hand and it falls and it hits somebody. Haya dola bechavis v'nifsek hachevel v'nafla alav. You're pulling up the barrel, and the cord breaks, and now it lands on somebody and kills him. V'haraktal. Or as we now turn to the top of Zion Amid Beis. Haya ola besulam. You're going up the ladder. V'nafla alav v'hargo. Haray ze eino gola. In all these cases, you're not going to be sent into golas. Ze aklal kol shebederech yirida. So again, now, after having all the examples, the Gemara gives us the common denominator, the sikum hadavar, the summary statement. As long as it's derech yirida, so you're going to be subject to galus. If it's not derech yirida, so you're not going to be subject to galus. The easiest way to say the Mishnah, explain the Mishnah. If it's not derech yirida, so what is it? So it's something that's more karv la'ones, meaning you already were fighting gravity. In other words, you knew enough to know that I'm going in the opposite direction. Now a mishap. It was a mistake. But that's the kind of mistake that's more curve laones in such an individual as in going to galus. Menani mili. Gemara starts off the discussion with, where does this come from? Amr Shmuel Amakra v'yapel alav v'yamos. Ad shipol derech nefila. In the Torah's description of someone going into galus, the Torah describes it b'derech nefila. He's going down. Tan rabbanan b'shkaga pralameze b'vlidaz pralameskavin. Gemara quotes a brisa is very succinct, but of course it's very problematic. Both points of the brisa. The Torah says shogeg, which excludes mezid. The Torah says bivlidas pratlam iskave. To which the Gemara says, what? What kind of exclusions are we talking about? So mezid pshita bar katalahu. In other words, it was bishogeg, it was unintentional. Because if it was premeditated, so that's such an individual is not sent into galus. To which the Gemara says, I knew that. We all knew that. Meaning if it's mezid, the person's a bar katala, of course he's not going to be sent to the galus. So Amar Rava, Ema Pratla Omer Mutter. So Rava says that it excludes somebody who thinks that it's mutter. Somebody who thinks that murder is mutter. That sounds almost implausible, sounds almost impossible. So Amar Le Abaye, Omer Mutter, Anusu. So Abaye says, well, wait 1 second. The guy thought it was mutter. Now, when I say he thought it was mutter, I know it's highly improbable, but let's at least just conceive for a moment. He legitimately thought it was mutter. Grew up with no education, and the culture that he's living in seems to be totally okay with murder. So such an individual thought that there was really no problem with it. So, just give me a moment. So Abaye says, well, Omer mutter. So Omer mutter, so that's honest, right? So Amale, Shani Omer mutter, Karv lemezid hu. To which Rava says, no, that's not right. In other words, for the person who says Omer Mutter that he thought that was okay, he thought that it was not usher in the Torah to kill somebody. So even though it's true, he's not going to be sent into Galus, and it's also true he's not going to be executed. But in terms of where to put that on the spectrum, I wouldn't, says Rava, I wouldn't put that on the spectrum of Karv Laones. I go in the other direction and say it's Karv Lamezit. I mean, there's something intuitive about murder that even if the person never formally learned that it's usher, and even if the culture that he's around is all engaged in this activity, but Rava says, I wouldn't say it's Karv La'onis, I'd say it's Karv La'mezit. Yes. Okay. Bivli das pralam miskavim. Miskavim pshita bar katalahu. So bivli das means that it couldn't have been premeditated, which means what? The exclusion is that once it's premeditated, you're not sent into galus. Of course you're not sent into galus. That's called murder. Amarava pralam miskavim la'arug is bayim avarug is adam. Lakusi varug is sol anefal varug ben kayama. So the Gemara says, no, the exclusion over here is where there was an intent to kill, but an intent to kill something that was not a capital crime. An animal, a nafal, a kusi. So in other words, all these actions to varying degrees are wrong, but in other words, not a capital crime. And then, instead of hitting your intended victim, you hit a ben kayama. You hit a Yehudi ben kayama. So under those circumstances, you're not going to be sent into galus. Tana Rabbanan. So now, a number of exclusions of the person is not going to be sent into galus. So first of all, the collision. The collision where they're both coming out of a blind corner, they're both turning the corner, and they run into each other, and the collision was so forceful that one of them died. That's not shogeg. You're not going to be sent into galus for that. That's onis. Below Eva, pratle sone. So below Eva is excluding a sone. Like we just discussed at the end of the first parak, you know, when there's a history of hatred, there is reason to suspect now that this was not shogeg. Hadafo shedachva begufo. Oh, he shlich. I'm sorry. Shadach v'begufo. Well, you pushed him with your body. One could make the argument that when you push him with your body, you can never describe that as being shogeg. No. If it was really an accident, again, accident, I don't mean accident. Accident's really just the worst way to describe it. Careless behavior. So, shadach v'begufo, you push him with your body. So, under those circumstances, it's shogeg. Oh, ishlich alav. Lahavi yirida shehit tzarech aliyah. If you sent it on him, so the Gemara describes it as it's a yirida, but with the purposes of aliyah. I will explain that better in just a moment. Belotzdiya, and without ambushing him. Pralim is kavan letzad zev ahachala letzad acher. Let's say you threw a stone, but it did land on somebody and killed him. But it was a wild pitch, meaning you meant it to go in one direction, and then just it went in a different direction. Under those circumstances, even though again what you did was terrible, but it's not a case of shogeg. Case of shogeg is where you threw it and it went in the direction in which you threw it in. V'asher lo tzida, problem is kavan lezrok shtayim v'zarok arba. Asher lo tzida is excluding. Well, let's say you only meant to throw it 2 amos, and instead it went 4 amos. So again, you didn't intend for it to go that far. That's not a case of shogeg. V'asher yavos re'ah b'yar, mayar shusunizik l'mazik l'kanas l'sham, af kol shusunizik l'mazik l'kanas l'sham. By the Torah contextualizing and telling us that it has to be in a forest, what the Torah is telling us is that the only time that a person is going to be sent into galus is where both the murderer, I use the word murderer over here just simply meaning the one who killed, the murderer and the victim are both in a place where they're allowed to be. We'll discuss later that if the victim himself was on the property of the murderer, so that such an individual is not sent into galus. And again, we'll be clear about that later. Okay, let's save the ladder talk for tomorrow. We're going up the ladder, and the rung comes down and hits somebody and kills somebody. Is that derech yirida? Is that derech aliyah? So we'll save the ladder talk for tomorrow. Let's just quickly recap. Finish the end of the first parak of Makos today. A number of halachas regarding Sanhedrin in general. And then the frequency in which Sanhedrin should actually execute somebody, once every 7, once every 70, or perhaps never. And the Gemara's discussion of what can the Beis Din actively do to try to exonerate somebody from getting the death sentence. We started the second parak of Makos this morning. We talked about being sent into galus. It has to be a very specific set of parameters in which the shogeg act will be sent somebody into galus. It can't be too close to mezid. It can't be too close to ones. And principally what we learned this morning is that it has to be derech yirida, not derech aliyah. And we'll discuss more details of that tomorrow morning with the latter.